everyone, and welcome to episode 38 of Total Football Debate Podcast. The four of us are back together, which means all hell is about to break loose. To try and keep things under control, we have a bit of structure today. It's come from the top, no arguments. Try and rein us in a little bit. We've all been given games that we need to discuss, and you know, we're going to find it very hard to sit quietly when we want to talk about something that we're not scheduled to talk about. But I'm sure we can follow a routine for once, boys. Well, the four of us are on. We've only got two teams that have had a double game week, and the rest should be pretty straightforward. So we've split it into certain segments and tried to keep it as routine as possible, where televised games go first and non-televised go in the second segment. However, to just keep things a little bit straightforward, just because certain games were televised in the double game weeks for Brighton and Man United and others weren't, we'll just keep them together. So the first two teams that are going to be discussed and all their games are Brighton and Man United, and I believe that's Jason and Cossy. So boys, over to you.
Well. Fair to say, a contrast in fortunes for both the teams. Seagull Simon, you're going to have to wait 5 or 10 minutes because I'm not going to start with Brighton. Although I'd love to, but we're going to park them for the minute. As for Man United, two big games on paper: Old Trafford against Brighton, and then a trip down memory lane for those of us that, you know the Premier League from the 90s with the Leeds game yesterday. Start off with the Brighton game, because it wasn't televised, so I couldn't really tell you too much about it. Obviously, there was a big talking point with Dunk being sent off, and he most definitely deserved his punishment in that context. Definite red card. I guess the big talking point from Wednesday was Ronaldo broke his duck, 6 games without a goal, and he finally managed to put away a goal, which was a smart finish. But in the end, all things told, it ended up being the victims of XG that are Brighton, a decent Brighton performance, but a good solid win for United.
Brighton fans can blame me for the Manchester United win. I tweeted saying this is a game where the fans will be chanting the cringeworthy attack, attack, attack. Just about 2 minutes before, they went 1-0 up, and then it was pretty much game over. When 3 minutes after that, they were down to 10 men. So, standard win. However, to go to the more exciting game against Leeds, yeah, that was a throwback, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it had it all, didn't it? Waterlogged pitch, mud. I mean, I don't know what it is about Leeds pitch, to be honest, because they've only just relayed it. It's meant to be a new pitch, but it was poor by any account.
It sort of gives me optimism as a sort of an amateur footballer when you look at how bad sort of professionals look at under those circumstances. You think, well, you try playing on a Saturday or Sunday league pitch, and Bruno Fernandes's default position was always pissed off. I swear that is just his natural look now, isn't it?
Yeah. It made me laugh when Leeds scored the second goal and he just bottled the challenge and expected the free kick. One thing I must say, for all that, there's a lot of talk about Man United at the moment, about will they finish top four, Ralf Rangnick not being the right person, and unrest at Old Trafford. There was reports of the Maguire-Ronaldo thing, and that, again, media leaks that, you know, overshadowed the build-up to their games. I'll be honest, I didn't see much of that on the pitch, if that were the case. Given the conditions, I have to say, the goals that United scored were of a high calibre, high quality, and to do that on the quality of that pitch, you know, I have to, we've slated them a lot in the last few weeks, it seems, but they definitely quality told in the end. Interesting, though. So I was looking into this with Ralf Rangnick and where they are. So he's now had 12 league games in charge, 7 wins, 4 draws, and only 1 loss. That loss coming against Wolves, which, look, let's face it, Wolves are one of them at the moment that you wouldn't fancy playing. And then 4 draws, which I guess is where the disappointment comes in, because those draws have come against Newcastle, Villa, Burnley and Southampton. Southampton are obviously on an upward trajectory, but as are or were Villa. But Newcastle and Burnley, certainly games there where United probably should have felt that they would have come away with, you know, 4 points extra overall there. But they're in the top four. I think one of the things, and he deserves credit because I think he got two assists in yesterday's game. Sancho seems like a different player. So whatever the manager has done there with him, he's clearly got him aside and, I don't know, made him feel more important or got him in the right position again, because he seems like he's got a little bit more life in him, which will be important for them. Alanga again came on, impressed. Beautiful goal. Again, we have to flag it, and it seems to be a massive problem nowadays. Coin thrown from the crowd. It seems like every week now.
The thing is, like I said, as a fan, you always get frustrated when a player sort of like giving it all to the fans, but you've got to, you give it as well as take it. That's exactly how it should be. As soon as they start throwing things onto the pitch, it's just like, as a sensible, well, not sensible football fan, but you know, as any other football fan with half a brain, you look at that and just think, oh, for goodness sake. And the fact that they got a cheer and all these big burly men like to the side of the United fans were like cheering when he went down and got hit by a coin. It's just like, for goodness sake, again, an easy target to be in the media, to be like, oh, thuggish football fans. you're just rolling your eyes every single week at the minute, and it's not good enough. It really isn't. It's pathetic.
You know, I don't know where we go with it, but clearly there's a problem, and, you know, there's no coincidence. It's happened too much of a regular basis at the moment. Currently 4 points clear of top four. Roy Keane seems confident that they're going to get top four. I would echo a side of caution to that, though, because they do have, well, three very tough league games coming up. By all means, it's not a done deal. They've still got, you know, tricky fixtures to overcome. And within that, and we'll come on to it later, Arsenal, Tottenham can have a big say in that as well. So for me, it's not as clear cut as them getting top four. They still look shaky at the back because Leeds did prod and probe them.
Not being funny, one good performance against the Leeds side, yes, they're difficult to beat, isn't going to 100% guarantee you top four, but it's the momentum that will potentially come from that. But again, like you mentioned Watford, you wouldn't be surprised if it's Man United won Watford one when they go to Old Trafford.
This is the thing. And, you know, there's still things in that game yesterday where, look, if the pitch was a better quality, could Leeds have come away? You know, I mean, they got two goals in the space of, what, a minute, you know, so... Still work to be done there, I feel, with United. The jury's still out, and it's the same as, for me, it's still the same as what we, although I haven't said that, as I said, the actual ratio, 12 league games, 7 wins, 4 draws, and only 1 loss, actually on paper, probably deserves it.
Yeah, it doesn't sound as bad as what's the reported toxic atmosphere at Old Trafford and what's going around there, and when Rashford's happened to come out and talk, and then it's just like no one's believing him. You think, well, look at the record. It's not actually that bad.
So, yeah, we'll see where they go with that. On to Brighton, down to the seaside. Seagull Simon, you can come in now and open your ears. 2-0 loss away to United, which, respectful, they played okay, but obviously couldn't do enough. Burnley, as for them, 3-0. Defeat to Burnley. And just to put that into context, that is Brighton suffering the heaviest defeat at home to a bottom side club since February 2017. The last team that lost heavier than that against a bottom place club was, ironically, Crystal Palace against Sunderland when we lost 4-0. So that result at the Amex, I would think, caught a few people off guard there. And for me, the performance would have raised some eyebrows, I think, because the performance wasn't there. And that is only 1 win in 6 now. 3 draws, 2 losses. And as I say, 1 win in 6. So, look, Brighton have had a good season. They are where they are. So it's a temporary blip. But, you know, that performance against Burnley will be a massive, massive concern. And as for Brighton, when we talk about how good their season has been, that is now 5 Premier League games where they've played the bottom team and they haven't won. So in their last 5 Premier League teams where they've played the bottom team, they have not won a game. They've drawn 3 and lost 2. Obviously, they had no Lewis Dunk for the Burnley game and they had no Webster. And we all know how crucial those players have been for them and how good they are for Brighton. So maybe it's just a case of a one-off because of the players that aren't available to them at the back. But either way, food for thought for Brighton fans there. One win,
even if it is a one-off. Looking at that game, I think everyone's eyebrows were raised, thinking, "What the hell happened in that game?" But you've got to give them credit to Burnley at the same time, because I know it's easy to slate Brighton because obviously you hate them and they are easy targets sometimes. But yeah, Burnley, everyone ruled them out. I know they've had a few games in hand, which doesn't always guarantee points. However, they're showing a real fight and they've pulled some other teams into the relegation zone, and they look good.
Do you think Burnley stay up?
I think so now, to be honest.
No, I mean, look, it was a proper, you know, Burnley performance, I felt, against Brighton. But, you know, like you say now, in Weghorst, in Cornet, you know, they've got the quality and, you know, players around them as well coming back into form as well. And they were brilliant.
I'd almost argue it wasn't a typical Burnley type performance, because I think they played quite good football in those games, in their game as well. They fully deserved the win, to be honest. They defended well. They played all right football during that game as well. But yeah, it was not a typical Burnley performance in my opinion. But it was a very good game.
Yeah, no, they played very well, very well. And as I say, how much of that is down to, you know, defensive absentees for Brighton, I don't know, but certainly for Burnley, a well-timed result given the next fixtures that are coming up. Just going back to Leeds there, Koss. So, obviously, they lost to United. Typical Bielsa ball for me, not good enough defensively, but, you know, that's now the fourth time Leeds this season have conceded more than four goals in a game. Only Newcastle and Norwich have managed to do that. I mean, do they get suckered in? I mean, part of me looks at that performance against United and think, could have been different. But then to concede four goals in a game again.
You'd have thought when they got back to 2-2, that was their opportunity to be like, do you know what? We've got them on the ropes now. But they could have gone on in front of their own crowd as well. They could have gone on to win that game. And that's not even exaggerating it. They must have gone into half time thinking, oh, shit. We're losing against a big rivalry here in front of our own fans. It's been a bit it's been hostile, etc. But yeah, they've got to be looking at themselves thinking, what went wrong in that game?
Well, they can't keep conceding like that either.
No.
They can't.
I think they're going to be dragged into the relegation zone, do you?
Well, I was about to ask you. So their next four games. So they've got Liverpool at Anfield on Wednesday, followed by a home game to Tottenham, away to Leicester, and at home to Villa.
Four huge games.
And just for your benefit, on the fifth game, taking us to the middle of March, they've got a home game against Norwich. I mean, how many points do you see them getting from that?
The Leicester game, for me, I don't think, well, I think potentially a draw against Tottenham, because you never know what you're going to get with Conte. But obviously, I'd rule out any points on Wednesday against Liverpool, at Anfield especially. The Leicester game, obviously, that could be... That could be when Rodgers might lose his job. You never know. And that could be what saves Rodgers' job. But, and Villa, you never know what you're going to get with them. So if I was a Leeds fan, I'd be thinking, hang on a minute, looking over my shoulder, because in those four games, if they don't get, say, 5-6 points, it's kind of worrying.
Yeah. But especially with the goals, as I say, they can't keep conceding goals like that.
When Burnley are going away from home, rooted at the bottom and winning 3-0, it says a lot, really. And if I was Leeds, I'd be thinking, well, where are we going to pick up our points from?
I'm still not having this Bielsa deserves a statue nonsense. And that, for me, is why, granted, in the Championship, he'd done well, but come on, the players they had and who he is at the time, granted. But now, for me, I think they're in big trouble. And I can't see, and this for Burnley, I think you're right. I think it raised a lot of eyebrows, and I do think that, you know, they're ones to watch out for, I think, going forward as well. I really do think they are the ones to watch at the bottom.
Look at Dyche. He's got plenty of experience of getting his teams like above safety, and like, you just think, well, hang on a minute, when are you going to go down? Well, if he continues how he is, why is that even in the question?
Well, that's one thing I want to just very briefly mention about Dyche, is if you watch him post-match, he's so calm. You know, he gets thrown all these questions about relegation and he's like, we just need to score. He says, we can defend well. We always keep a good shape. We always defend. He's confident. He's known that the only thing missing from their game was scoring. And arguably, it's a stroke of genius. upgrade him from, because let's face it, Weghorst and Chris Wood is definitely an upgrade. So you could argue there that that's really good business. But, you know, he's confident. He's confident in their shape. He's, and, you know, to be fair, he has said it all along. The only thing he feels like they're missing is the quality up front. Well, in him and Cornet, they've definitely got that now. Every opportunity is staying up. And I think they are the ones to watch in the relegation dogfight.
Nice. I'm telling you now, at the end of the season, we'll be looking at that Weghorst. Just remember what I said. He is an absolute talent. You know when you've got a good talent when you're third in line behind Lewandowski and Haaland and you're only about 5 goals off. So I'm telling you now, that's the difference between scouting at Burnley and scouting at other clubs. And I think more people could sit back and take note. The fact that Cornet tore up the French league and Weghorst tore up the Bundesliga and they're at Burnley, I think other teams need to sit up and take note. Anyway, we are going to talk about a team that scouting is a little bit questionable now. Myself and Cookie on this one. So West Ham, Newcastle, I believe we both watched it. How do you feel West Ham are doing? How do you feel Newcastle are doing?
I feel West Ham are just plodding along at the minute and they're relying on their heavy hitters up front. Well, I say heavy hitters, there's only one at the minute, and that's Jared Bowen. I mean, if you can isolate him on that right-hand side, and you stop him cutting inside, I mean, that is it. That's West Ham's attack. Because ever since the new year, Antonio has just not quite looked at it. He's coming in deep to try and look for the ball. He's trying to look into holes where he's trying to make silly challenges where he's no longer needed. I mean, on Antonio, I mean, where the goals are going to come from? I mean, Pablo Fornals, Benrahma, I mean, he started off the season brilliantly, but tailed off. Set pieces, I mean, they're one of the best teams in the league at set pieces.
No, I agree. Without Bowen, at the moment, West Ham look nothing like they did at the beginning of the season. They're looking a little bit fragile.
Yes, yeah, this calendar year from Bowen alone. Which is it all. He hasn't scored in 2 games this calendar year in the league.
In the last 5 games, West Ham are 13th.
Their play dictates that when you're relying on one player. I mean, Declan Rice has his runs. He doesn't want to be known as just a defensive midfielder. He wants to be known as a box-to-box, you know, can run all day, every day for 90 minutes. But he can't do it all.
No, the turn of the year has definitely been tough for West Ham, got to be honest. I mean, they're hanging on in there. But it looks like, you know, a few wins from Arsenal, Wolves and Tottenham and all of a sudden they'll be sitting in 8th spot. And then you can start to question, which seems odd. You know, beginning of the season, we thought this was the turnaround for West Ham. But the fact that they could end up finishing where they do every other season, weird. It just seems weird. Now, the reason I just want to move on to Newcastle is I've got a bit to say about Newcastle. But firstly, from the game perspective, Cook, what do you make of Newcastle? Have you noticed any difference in the way that they're playing? Have you noticed anything that he's done?
I mean, Eddie Howe's got them to start playing forward a little bit more, thinking a bit positively. I mean, Joe Willock all of a sudden looks like he's getting into positions where he looks more dangerous, like the end of last season.
He had no right to score that, did he?
He had absolutely... That was ridiculous. Royce thinks, oh, he's dealt with the situation. 9 times out of 10, you think, oh, he's done his job. But the audacity of Willock to not only think he can get that, but to turn that from a tight angle is insane. But, I mean, he's completely transformed Joel Linton in terms of work rate. I mean, he's running backwards and forwards for the team. The play is starting to go through Jonjo Shelvey, where all of a sudden, where it wasn't quite clicking with his passing, all of a sudden, them long diagonals have now going to feet. So he's giving himself options, and it's not all down to the new signs either.
No, and this is part of my point. So I'm glad you've said that because, you know, firstly, the fact that Newcastle got a draw against West Ham without Maximan Trippier. And I know we could say Callum Wilson's been out most of the season, but he's still out regardless. I think that highlights your point because other than Chris Wood and Target, there was no new signing on the pitch. Wood, let's be fair, hasn't really done anything yet. And the one thing that I think he has done, Eddie Howe, which I've got to give him credit for, is he's identified two positions that have completely changed his whole game, and that is fullbacks. I think the fullbacks is such a it's genius. Not genius as in like, oh, it took a genius, but considering how long it's taken for a manager to identify that, it almost comes across like it's genius. I think the Joe Linton point is a great point. The fact that, you know, it wasn't working for him, but the guy's built like a tank. And to put him in midfield and see if he can do something with it, and he clearly is. He's got this work rate that I didn't realise he had.
He's quick. He's a lot more quicker. You see him more on the ball now. You actually see what his abilities are. And he has got pace to burn a lot more than what I think other teams and players seem to have forgotten. So you think, oh, he's lining up you to take on one-on-one, but all of a sudden he's whipped past you.
Yeah.
I mean, his final ball, he's still got to work on. You know, he's not the greatest of finishers either. He's not a striker.
No, he's not. And I think that's the thing. They've identified that and gone, let's see what else you can do. And he's doing it. The one thing that I wanted to raise about Newcastle, and Cookie, by all means, please, you know, oppose it or whatever. And I think we're very quick. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's the right thing. But at the end of the day, I know a lot of people say about Newcastle, it's easy. And I saw a tweet that came back, you know, oh, it's easy for, you know, when you can spend 100 million to keep you up. And I sat there and I thought, is it though? Because if that was the case, Everton wouldn't be where they are. Villa wouldn't be 1-8. You know, I think it's such an easy thing to say, oh, if you had the money, you could make it work. Because we've spoken about Man United spending five. Well, by now, they should be winning the Champions League if that's the case. Yeah, Everton should be above Liverpool if that's the case, spending that much money.
Yeah, we spent the most money in the summer and we're battling for a top four place.
It's not done anything.
It's not done nothing.
And I think the fact that you highlighted, this is Newcastle that, you know, haven't even started Bruno yet. So I don't think that that can be used yet. It's not the same way as people just spending money, throwing a new team in. This is the same team, pretty much.
You can argue their best signing other than Trippier is Eddie Howe. You know, if they're going to go 1-0 down, they're going to go down fighting.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely done something. It surprised me. I didn't have a massive belief, and I still don't think he's the long-term solution. And let's be fair, neither do the board. But when you're looking at managers sitting in there, you know, and we're looking at your Frank Lampard, your Steven Gerrards and Eddie Howe's in there. And at the moment, Eddie Howe's teaching him a lesson, because it's clearly not as easy as it should be, because the other two teams who had the most activity in January, they're not doing anything. So I think that's something that just needed to be highlighted, as much as I don't agree with the, you know, the takeover and whatnot, but it's going to happen. We knew this was going to happen one day. Another team was going to join the powerhouses, and it happens to be them. You know, we look down and we, you know, turn our noses up at them. But at the same time, you kind of sit there and you think, well, if it was you, would you be surprised if your team decided to spend some money? Probably not. And this league is brutal. You don't get points for, you don't get sympathy points for being the teams that don't spend, and eventually it's going to get you relegated. It's just the way it is. But I think we needed to highlight that, and Newcastle, just to highlight how well they're playing, they're fourth in the last five games.
Yeah,
you know, that is
six as well, which, you know, that's good momentum when you're down there fighting, because at the minute, with that draw, they would probably finish their game thinking, right, we've got a good point at West Ham. I mean, all of a sudden, Leeds lose their game. They watch that happen. They watch Everton lose their game. You know, they're dragging them towards them. But at the same time, they're looking over their shoulder at Burnley, like Jason's highlighted. I mean, even Watford come out of nowhere. So they're kind of in a bit of a rock and a hard place. But if they keep the positive mindset, I think they'll do enough to stay up.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you and Cossie are now going to talk about a team that are the second least informed team in the Premier League in the last five games, and a manager who is clinging on to his job. Wolves Leicester, boys.
I'll let you introduce this. Cook, what do you think? You've been very vocal about Wolves and how much you've enjoyed
Wolves have
their
all
season.
Of a sudden, they've intense the rivalry for this top four, haven't they, lately? What are we supposed to do? You know, you go there. I mean, Wolves are a difficult team to beat. They don't concede a lot of goals. They don't. I know they don't score a lot, but they don't get beaten a lot of games. So when we went there and beat them 1-0, the way we did, because obviously you never ball 10 men, you're going to celebrate like that when you defend for your lives. You're fighting at that end of the table with Wolves. So I don't know what they expected. But anyway, in terms of the game, I felt Wolves just stamped their authority right from the off. It's just how they operate. I mean, Ruben Neves gets a goal from the outside of the box. I mean, you could predict that all day long against them. Leicester did fight. I mean, they scored a lovely goal. Did you watch that goal, Leicester's? That ball from that's undefendable. And they were rightly going nuts at each other. And you think, hang on, that's elite mentality here with that back line of Kilman, Cody, Saez. They were absolutely livid with each other. And I just look at it and I think, well, there weren't really a lot you could do about it. They are now starting to concede. And the last three games, I've watched a lot of Wolves, obviously, since that 1-0. They are starting to concede chances a bit more frequently than they used to. Even in the Tottenham game, they kind of sat back and they were starting to see a little few gaps. I don't know if it was because of João Moutinho not being in there, because he does dictate that midfield. He's constantly in Dendonka's ear, Neves's ear, even the fullbacks he's screaming at. I don't know if it's anything to do with that, but I just felt that they were large parts of that game, were there for the taking.
I think the performance from Podence was absolutely superb. He looked absolutely unplayable at times, didn't he?
He did. And he's had that ability for a while now. Obviously, injuries have not helped him. And and being in and out of the team, I don't know if he fell out with Espirito Santo for whatever reason. But yeah, I mean, all their play is going through him at the minute.
And to give Leicester a little bit of credit, because obviously we put out there on our Twitter, how many games does Brendan Rodgers have? And it seemed to be between 4 and 5. But the performance against Wolves, I felt that Wolves could have easily lost that game, to be honest, because I thought Leicester actually played really well in spells. What do you think?
They did play well. They did take the game to Wolves when it went 1-0 down. I mean, at 1-1, that was anybody's game, but I just felt Leicester were most likely to go and get a winner. And bearing in mind, they've got no Vardy, no Perez. Perez is on the bench. Maddison obviously had his little issue in the week. No Castagna at the back, no Evans at the back. So they are missing big players, and yet...
So though we are giving them, yeah, we have been critical of them, but as you say, their injury list is probably bigger than, you know, I said in the past that if Jamie Vardy's injured, that's their team pretty much screwed. However, the big names that you just mentioned as well, and also to add to the list that you said, Tielemans is a want-away player as well. So it's sort of a difficult situation when you're playing, you know, you're having to start someone who doesn't even want to be there for starters. How does Brendan Rodgers get the motivation for someone like Tielemans, who's integral for their fight for top four, which obviously isn't going to happen now? But yeah, to give Rodgers credit, I thought Leicester looked very, very good against Wolves.
Yeah, I thought the game on Thursday gave him a lot of confidence as well, because momentum is a real thing in football. You know, they've got players in there like Daka, Jason's favourite, who, if you give him the time of day and you feed him, that he does put the ball in the back of the net. You know, they've got kids in there like Luke Thomas, Dewsbury Hall, who looks a player as well. Give him like a run like what Jacob Ramsey at Aston Villa, who knows what he can do. I think Leicester just need a run of games, really. They need some points on the board to just calm them down. I mean, the next three are Burnley, Leeds and Arsenal. I mean, Burnley, that's a big, big game for both of them, really.
What would you do with Rodgers?
I'd still give him to the end of the season. given the injury list, given they're in kind of middle of the pack. I know they've hit the high standards, but see what he can do with them.
Judging by the look on Jason's and Scott's faces, I think they'll have something to say after we have our little segment on them. Yeah, I've been critical of Rodgers in the past, and I think a lot of Leicester fans have as well. However, look at it as a bigger picture. He brought silverware to them last season, which was unexpected. You are right in saying that he deserves his chance just because of the silverware that he's brought. But at times this season, it's just been such a frustrating watch for Leicester fans, because obviously at the start of the season, it was sort of top four. Yeah, okay, we could do that. And now it's just that we're talking about them as if, oh yeah, they'd be lucky to get into the top eight, to be honest. But yeah, is there a better manager available though? That's what you've also got to look at as well.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to look hard to find a good manager to go in there and replace him now. I mean, what do you do if you sack him? Do you go with the temporary job like Man United? What do you do? They're still in Europe. I mean, they're 4-1 up and they're playoff. I mean, they get a run in Europe. Who knows?
I agree with you. I do agree with you. I think he deserves to have until at least the end of the season and then potentially rebuild from there if he gets a little bit of money from their owners. Obviously, they're not short of cash.
The only thing I'll just say, just while we're on that, I was just going to say, and by all means, this is just a genuine question to all of you without going on too much about it. But as Kossi said, let's be fair. Not that I'm saying Brendan Rodgers is a great manager, but when we're talking about Leicester always expecting to be higher where they are, well, I mean, is that realistic? I mean, have they been a victim of their own success? Because I do wonder, is there a better manager out there for this rebuild? If you're going to rebuild, is there any point sacking the manager if you know a rebuild's coming when you don't know what he might do with it?
I'm going to be honest, I think the problem is twofold at Leicester. One, he came in, two seasons ago now? And he came in at a point where they were looking to carry on where they left off. But if you stick to facts, you know, both seasons, last season and this season, they've bottled top four. They've had a very poor Europa League campaign under him this season as well. And they've ended up in the Conference Cup or whatever it is. Conference League. And I just think with Rodgers, I said it before, he's a glorified Alan Pardew. He comes in for one season, has an impact. Then the second season, he's won the FA Cup. And then the third season, it tails off. And, you know, that's how it works with him. Honestly, and I also think with Leicester, if we're honest, I think they've regressed. So Carragher said it on Sky Sports a couple of weeks ago. You need a ton of money nowadays to rebuild. I don't think they're in the... I mean, you know, you look at the teams that are rebuilding this season, it's not just a one-window or two-window job. It's a couple of windows. And I don't think that they're in the position... If you're Leicester, you're used to the top four in Europe. They're not going to get the players in that they need to break into that top four now, because Man United, when they inevitably appoint Pochettino in the summer, Chelsea, Liverpool, Cities, they'll be miles ahead of them now. That glory gap of Leicester trying to get their way into the top four is gone now. It is done. They're not going to go head-to-head. Even Arsenal, I should say, could be in that bracket next season. They're not in that same remit. And I don't think... In the summer, if Leicester against Arsenal for players, if Leicester against Man United for players, I don't think they're no longer the attractive choice. I think Leicester are where they are on merit. They're a mid-table team. They won the league. No one expected it. They got a season in the Champions League. And then they've not managed to maintain it. Yes, they won an FA Cup last season. But look, people keep talking about injuries. But the only injury, you know, the only main injuries I see are at the back, but they've still got players that have come in and, you know, still capable of doing a job. We're not talking, you know, if Crystal Palace have like Tyrick Mitchell injured, they bring in some unknown kid. You know, they've got good quality players in every position. Midfield, they've got good quality players in mid position. Defence, Soyuncu, Johnny Evans, and if he's not available, they spent big money on Vestergaard. you know, they've got tons of players available to them. So it's not a poor team.
I don't know if it's fair, and I don't want to linger on Leicester for too long, but I don't know if it's the fairest thing to say that Leicester have regressed, because factually, yes, they have, of course, because they've regressed from being a title winning side. But did they have, were they ever meant to be title winning team? And I think it's like almost similar, and funny enough, similar to Spurs, you know. Were Spurs ever in a position where they should have got to where they were, you know, top four consistently, Champions League final? And we're still sitting there going, oh, we should be in the Champions League final. No, we shouldn't. We should have never been there in the first place. You know, let's be fair. We had one of the most, you know, incredible runs, but that was because we made a mess of it and managed to recover it both times. So
on the flip side to that, Tottenham on their way to the Champions League final consistently finishing the top four, right? In those years, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Leicester, since they've won the Premier League, haven't been able to do it. They got the season in the Champions League. They were in for two seasons in a row. They controlled the top four, looked way clear, and then become between February and May, they bottled the top four twice. So they should have been in the Champions League last season and the season before. They should have been in the Champions League, but their Premier League form nosedived at crucial points.
Yeah, I agree with the nosedive. I just don't think they had any right to be there in the first place. You know, the fact that they were there, but the fact that they were there gave them an opportunity and they blew it. So I get what you're saying, and it is something that will be interesting, and we do need to keep a close eye on it.
A victim of their own success.
I think they are. I think they are. Exactly. And I would love to know who is out there that you feel could step in at Leicester and do a job there that Brendan Rodgers might not be able to do anyway. Man City, Tottenham.
Well.
How have I come from last week's episode to this episode? Why am I going to come back next week for the next week's episode moping about losing to Burnley in midweek?
I think it's really, really important here. If we rewind the clock back to just 3 weeks ago when we were talking about January deadline and the disappointment for most Spurs fans when it came to Paratici's so-called business and only bringing in Bentenker and
Kulusevski.
That's it. You rewind the clock there and people are saying they've not delivered, he's not delivered, Levy's not delivered, here we go again, blah, blah, blah. I actually think, looking at the game on Saturday and the games in isolation to date, I think it's very important to give Conte credit, Paratici arguably credit, in the fact that those two signings haven't had to have any bedding in time whatsoever. They've come in and they've made an instant impact. So they've not come in and looked half-assed and looked half okay and half not. They've come in, arguably biggest game of the season for Spurs and Conte, off the back of all the speculation, off the back of all the slagging off in the media, and the media trying to, you know, the quotes coming out of Sky Italia about, you know, Conte being disappointed and, you know, all this, that and the other. I think that's a massive, massive result. Now, you're right in joking that it could all come crashing down midweek when you face Burnley. But I don't feel like this time round is a false dawn.
I will highlight something just before we go into, you know, probably a praise fest of Spurs and probably a bit of a reality check for Man City, because a bit of a wobbly moment. And I do think this gap now is as tightened, and I think that's going to scare them a little bit. The one thing I have noticed, and it's been brought to my attention, and it'll be interesting because if it happens, we've got something to talk about next week with Spurs Burnley, because I've heard that Conte is one of the best managers in the world when you give him a week to prepare for games. Apparently, his performance is not quite as good when he only has a couple of days to prepare for a midweek game. It'd be interesting because Southampton was a midweek game and we lost to them. He then only had 3 days to prepare for Wolves. We lost for them. But then he's had a week to prepare for Man City and he beat them. So let's see how he gets on when he only has 3 days to prepare for Burnley, because if that falls victim to that script, we might be onto something there. And I've never noticed it before. So keep an eye out. Remember it. Note it down. Because if you're discussing Spurs-Burnley, then it'd be interesting if that comes back. He'll probably beat Burnley and it'd probably throw it in the air. How much of a difference do you think, Jace, Benton Kerr and Kulusevski have made? Because I don't know about you, but I think they are a different world of quality to what we have.
Two things that stand out for me. So Kulusevski, I'll admit, I was sceptical about him because he didn't have the impact at Juve that people expected. He certainly didn't replicate. Mind you, he wasn't really given a chance. And
fit. He was only 19 when he went to Juve. Yeah,
very young. What stood out for me with him is his work rate and his pressing. And we all know with Conte teams, when he was manager at Chelsea before, when that team clicks, every single one of them are a nightmare to play against. Every single one of them. And they run and they run and they run. And two things for me. So Kulusevski, not only work rate matched on the other side with Son, but quality to go in with that as well. Brilliant finish, by the way, because he could have easily fluffed that chance. Son, I think, was almost a bit too unselfish, but it could have gone wrong when he scored the opener. But he got it through the legs and it was a very calm finish. As for Benton Kerr, I think you're missing that shithouse in midfield for a very, very long time. That one that can break up the play, slow it down. He's not a playmaker by no means, but he knows how to mitigate and navigate the midfield. So, yeah, massive, massive signing for Spurs there. Add in Højbjerg with that or any other midfielder, and that's exactly what you need. What I will say is not only the new signings, but arguably Harry Kane with probably the best, not just his best performance of the season, but probably the best individual centre-forward performance I have seen from any centre-forward in the Premier League this season. To coin a phrase from Kossi, he was absolutely superb. You know, he was. We criticised him. We criticised him for England when he would drop in the pocket and he was too slow to break the line. But what Conte has proved is that whereas he cannot break the lines, we'll dip him into the 10. We'll get the players, you know, City defenders and midfielders don't really know what to do with him. I mean, that pass he put off to Son to put Son clean through. Outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. What Conte has done, and no one's really mentioned it as well, yes, you've got the two new players in. Yes, the rest of the squad are a bit inconsistent, but he's instilled a winning mentality in that team. Harry Kane's got fire in his belly. Now, whatever way you look at it with Kane, I'll keep this short because there's a couple of other points I want to bring up as well. But with Harry Kane, I think as a Spurs fan, you've got to look at it twofold. One, he'll carry on performing like he did on Saturday, and he'll stay at Spurs next season. They'll get the signings in they need in the summer and Spurs will go on to be a force again. Or two, he has a really good season and they get that big money bid from City and that enables a massive rebuild. So I think either way, if you're Spurs and you're a Spurs fan, you win. If Conte can get the best out of Harry Kane between now and the end of the season, even if he doesn't stay, if they get 100 million for him, I think Paratici, given that the two players he's managed to get in January alone, if that's the standard, I think he easily manages a rebuild and gets what he wants in terms of money and plays and stuff. Only the fourth team in the league as well to now do a double over City, over Pep. And, you know, outrageous. And I think outside of the defenders, Eric Dier, Romero, brilliant. Son and Kane, now level with Lampard and Drogba, 36 assisted Premier League goals. Slightly outrageous that Spurs haven't won a trophy when you consider how influential in that era Drogba and Lampard were for Chelsea. So when Levy comes under criticism, I think he's got to look at that and think, damn, I actually have the tools to actually potentially win some trophies. And
they still potentially could have another season or two to add on top of that, which is outrageous in itself. But you are right. And I did highlight that in our little chat about the fact that how Spurs haven't done anything with that is remarkable. I want to give a shout to Sessegnon to come off the back of that Wolves game where he was substituted after 25 minutes to then get thrown into a game he probably wouldn't have started if Reggie didn't have COVID, and he done so well, which is not easy to do. Yeah, there's not really much more I can say about Spurs other than I didn't see it come in. Some of the goals were fantastic. You know, I think there's a massive VAR inconsistency with the handball in the penalty, because I know there were other games where that should have been. I know Cookie's got one when he talks about Arsenal and Brentford. How you can give it for one and not the other two. I can't remember the other game. It was, I think it might have been Watford Villa. I don't know. That might have to remind me when you're on, boys. Jace, just while we've got a couple of minutes left, Man City. They can't deal with one-touch football. We've seen that. They can't deal with it. Pep's got a bit of a... He can't seem to overcome, because we are Man City's bogey team and we have beaten them four or five times in the exact same manner. And he can't identify it.
He called it pre-game, didn't he? He did call it pre-game. On Man City, what I would say is the manner of the defeat, regardless of Conte figuring out and Tottenham figuring out how City play, the manner in which they conceded that third goal after equalising and getting that penalty to then, you know, I know it happened against Southampton for Spurs, but I'd be massively, massively concerned if I'm Pep and I'm City now, especially when you think Liverpool have got the game in hand, which they're undoubtedly favourites to win. You've got that game in April at the Etihad, and Liverpool seem to have a grip on Pep as well. They seem to be one of the other teams that seem to always oust him. I think if you're City, you're sitting back there and you're licking your wounds a bit, because I don't, you know, Liverpool win that game in hand, it's a 3-point gap.
Liverpool in the last five have gained 5 points on Man City. They're 6 points behind in the table with what, 13 games to go?
Yeah, and the concern is, this puts it into context, the defeat on Saturday was City's... So, given that everyone waxed lyrical about their record, City's record recently, and Liverpool, we've said it, Liverpool not going to be able to keep up, that on Saturday was Man City's first Premier League defeat since October, which, just for all those out there listening, was against Crystal Palace. But if Man City have been that higher standard... And that one loss against Spurs has now resulted in Liverpool's game in hand closing that gap to 3 points. That just shows that actually, for all of the right and off we've done with Liverpool, that just shows just the sheer quality and consistency of Liverpool and the level that they're playing at as well. So they're definitely going to be looking over their shoulder now, I feel, because I think Liverpool, especially, I feel like the signing of Diaz now gives them that extra impetus. If Mane's tired, Salah gets tired, no problem. Diaz will come straight in and pick up the mantelpiece for it. And I think the momentum is, it's easy to say after one game, and it's early, it's only Feb, but I'm going to say it now, it's Liverpool's to lose. I had City winning the league, but right now, yes, they've still got to go out and win that game on Wednesday. Yes, they've still got to go to the Etihad, but I'm telling you now, it's Liverpool's to lose.
Cossie and Cookie, I know, are going to discuss Liverpool and Norwich later in that fixture.
A quick one to wrap up, Scott. Got to ask you, since you're the Tottenham fanboy here. So you've got two big games coming up. Seems mental saying big games because they're against Burnley and Leeds. And it should be Spurs of old would be saying 6 points all day long. How many points are you taking from those two games? Your gut feeling. Right now.
And the four.
Four.
Yep.
And would you be happy with that?
No, enough? I want six. It can only be six. I'm sorry.
Six.
It can only be six. You've got West Ham sitting in fifth spot. You know, Arsenal are now level on games with us. 3 points behind. We know Arsenal have got it in them to lose a couple of games here or there. But Arsenal will be sitting there at the same time going, well, Spurs have got it in them. The only one that haven't got it in them, fucking Wolves. And Wolves are sitting right in the middle of us both.
Sorry, that'll be short of Thursday.
Well, we'll see. That's on Amazon Prime, by the way. Just giving everyone a heads up. Definitely watch that. It'd be a good game. Probably be 0-0, but hey-ho. Middle segment, boys. So, we know what comes first. Predictions comes first.
Jesus Christ.
So let's rattle these off. Let's see how many points Cossie's got. Fucking hell. So, yeah. First game was Leeds Man United. I was the only one to get a point there, because I was the only one for some reason that thought Man United were going to win. So I said 1-0, far from it. Jason, you actually said 3-2, but Leeds. So just swap it around and next time you'll be all right. West Ham Newcastle. Only one person didn't get a point in this, and that was Cookie. We've got our first 3 points on the board, though, from someone. And it's that man, Basta. He got the 3 points on West Ham Newcastle. He said 1-1, so look at him celebrating. Oh, dear, that got his hands off his cock, didn't it? Anyway...
My hand's back on it now. Oh, yeah.
Well, at least it's not on that pen. West Ham, Newcastle, me and Cossie said it would be a draw, 2-2. So we got that. We got a point anyway. So Cossie and Jason and Cookie are tied. What a sprint. Just 10 points behind me, that's all. Wolves, Leicester. One of us got 3 points. That was me. So sorry, boys. That puts me on 51 points. And the only other two that got a point was Cossie and Cookie. You said it would be 1-0 Wolves. So you both go on 39, which puts Jason bottom again. Back to normal. And then finally, Southampton, Everton. We all thought Southampton would win. Just none of us got the correct scoreline. Cossie and Cookie, you just needed Everton to not score and you would have got 3 points. So we all got a point there. So nothing changes. So that leaves Jason on 39, Cookie on 40, Cossie on 40, myself on 52. I'm not celebrating yet because, you know, I'm not Man City. Anyway, guess what? Come back, boys.
Should we just rename this Bastards Bundesliga?
Oh, the Wheel of Wonders back, boys. I know you've missed it. You know, but because it's not weekly fixtures, we're obviously going to have to summarise the leagues and form and tables. So it's not as difficult. You haven't got to worry too much. You know, a good flash score app, last 5-10 games. Form table, happy days, that'll get you sorted. We don't need to spin it for Jace. We know which one he's landing on. But, you know, let's see how Cossie does, because I think if I remember last time, Cossie, you had a bit of a mare.
I'm fully expecting to embarrass myself for a further minute. So anyone who's listening, I'm not an expert. I'm pretty useless.
I'm sure. So, who is going first? You've got a full wheel to get your...
I'm going first.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I'll spin it for you, but we know where it's going. So here we go. Let's see who you're getting. Ooh, you got lucky. You got the championship, my friend. Probably the one that Cossie wouldn't have minded. So... Cookie, have you got the timer?
Has he got more time for this?
No, it's a minute. We'll keep it at a minute because, you know, a quick summary of the tables and what's going on is more than okay. Mind you, it's hard to summarise the championship in a minute. I'll give you that. So feel free to count him in, Cook.
Right, are you ready, Jason?
Ready as I'll ever be.
Right, okay. It's 3, 2, 1, let's go.
Well, there's a bit of a conspiracy at the moment in the Championship because plucky old Bournemouth there, sitting 6 points behind Fulham, seemingly apparently have a bit of an injury crisis. And they've managed to get not only the Nottingham Forest game postponed because of Storm Innes or whatever it was, but also their game against Swansea tomorrow because they haven't had enough time to recover the damage from the stadium at the Vitality. What a disaster. What a bunch of cocksuckers. That aside, don't know where that comes from. Anyway, Nottingham Forest in form in the cup and in form in the championship. Certainly 3 points off the playoffs now. Fulham top, shock. Bournemouth in, plucky little Bournemouth in second. Roy of the Rovers, Blackburn in third. And then fourth, fifth and sixth is occupied by QPR, Huddersfield and Sheffield United. Bottom three, Barnsley, Peterborough, but the big story of the championship season, and it's only fair that I spend the remaining time talking about them.
There you go.
Rooney and Derby County. 5 points off the bottom after, well, let's face it, having 21 points is absolutely outrageous.
Are you going into extra time here?
Absolutely superb. Up the rounds.
It was a quick minute, I tell you what. Fuck me, that
was 1:15, that was. I'll let him off because he did mention Derby, who are doing a brilliant job down there.
Too long you let me off. Who the hell do you think you are?
I'm not having that top six. I'm sorry, I don't want any of them. Oh, no, actually, tell a lie. I don't mind Blackburn.
No, Blackburn Rovers, I'll have up there, to be
yeah,
fair.
Yeah, Blackburn, bring them back. We just need Luton and Forest and Coventry in there, and I'll be happy. Who's going next? Cossie. Oh, okay, mate. Okay, let's see how you get on.
I might need a minute to prepare.
Just all get right, the cage okay. Jelly just, ready.
That's it. That's it. You know, bit of form table. So you're getting... Serie A.
Oh.
To be fair, this is not my expertise. You boys are the experts.
Just get the table up, mate, and tell us what's going on.
I've got the table up.
There's a team in eighth that shouldn't be where they are. So
yeah, I'm literally Aussie, looking at
I'll
them
give
right
you a
now.
Bit of a cue before your time starts.
Thank God that Kyle. Anyway,
so I didn't hear a word of that, Jace.
Look, come on, Cos, no pressure. Look at the table, look at the form. Who's top goal scorer? Happy days, off you go. Jason, you can count him in.
Right. Three, two, one, go.
Right, okay. The Serie A, not a league I tend to follow, much to the disappointment of my fellow three podcast members. However, at the moment, AC Milan are top with Inter, Napoli and surprisingly Juve at fourth. I know that AC Roma, Mourinho's beloved team, I know that he got sent off at the weekend during a 2-2 draw against Verona. The only time that I've ever bet on Italian football, it never, ever, ever comes in, even if you go through the most obvious, and that being Inter Milan, who lost 2-0 against Sassuolo, however you say it. I'll let the boys obviously... correct my ignorance. However, why would they not win at home when they're second in the league and they could have gone top? Other than that, Juventus, it surprises me that they're so far off the top as well. So, yeah, I think that's my minute up and I've pretty much covered everything that I know
that
about this
minute. That is your minute up.
Do you know what that reminded me of? Because I forgot. I remember now. You had it last time and you went on a rant. I hope you stick with that kind of approach to this because it just adds
just
a whole other
angry,
level. The fact that you spoke of it is so true. At home to Sassuolo and they go and lose.
I swear to God, I just got a free bet from Ladbrokes. I was like, right, I'll just stick an accumulator on the teams that should win and see what happens. And for some reason, whenever I bet on Italian football, it never, ever comes in. Even like if it's 1-5.
To be fair,
five,
Sassuolo are top of the form table as well.
They are at the moment. Right. On to the next one. Cookie or me? What are we doing?
Go on, I'll go. I'll get
mine
out of the way.
Uber Eats. Well, we know there was a story this week, that's for sure. But, you know, you might not want to divulge too much into individual stories. But, yeah, let's see how you get on then. I'll time you on this one. 3, 2, 1, and you're off.
So, there was a bit of a shock on Saturday. PSG, runaway leaders, top of the form table. You think the Farmers League's all theirs? No, they go and lose 3-1. Who would have thought it? You've got Strasbourg second in the form table, followed by Lyon, Nice, Marseille, Nantes, Saint-Étienne, blah, 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 blah. Top of the standings, I mean, PSG walking away with it. I mean, they may as well feel they're under nines at this point. Followed closely by Marseille, who I've obviously got a bit of an interest with a couple of players that play for them in Guendouzi and Saliba. Lyon down in mid-table, nowhere near fighting for Europe. Monaco just slightly above them in sixth place ahead of Nantes. At the bottom, Bordeaux, Metz, Lorient and Troyes have all got the same points. Closely followed by St Etienne.
Tie.
Hang on a minute. Can I just go back to the sentence Marseille? Because I obviously have an interest in them because of Saliba and Guendouzi. Said no one.
You're
going
to keep an eye on your players you play for them, aren't you?
Guendouzi, do you want anything to do with him?
Well, that's not the point, is it?
Has Saliba even played for Arsenal?
No, he's not. It's hilarious, isn't it?
It is. He can't get out of France. That's the problem.
But obviously, exactly, I'm just going to keep an eye on them, isn't it?
If someone liked cucumber and cheese, then that's perfectly all right. Exactly.
What was the individual story? I didn't read anything on that.
Oh, no, that was PSG and Nantes.
Oh, it was PSG.
I'm surprised you didn't mention Neymar's penalty, because I know Jason would have something to say about that penalty and Zaha's penalty. I know which one's worse.
Yeah, weren't the headlines fat, you fuckers?
Anyway, Lali...
And a special mention to Jason when he did a Cookie's accent. He just turned Cookie Northern for some reason. Going back for 2 minutes. It's like, hey, oh, I'm Cookie, apparently. Hello.
Hello.
He's from Bolton. So without further mention of Bolton, of Bolton Abbey, of Bolton's fantastic football, Bolton Reebok football, Bolton Stadium.
Anyway, let's go. La Liga and Bundesliga. Let's have a look. Who am I getting? Oh, of course, yeah, I'll get Bundesliga then. Brilliant.
Right, ready? 3, 2, 1, off you go.
I wouldn't say it's usually that obvious, but it always is with the Bundesliga. Who's top of the table? Of course, it's Bayern Munich on 55 points, shock. The teams trailing behind seem to have steadied themselves out and actually ended up also following the script, because Dortmund are now second, Leverkusen in third, Leipzig in fourth. So at the moment, you know, things look to be going well. But when you look at the form table, you start to realise that actually there is a couple of mentions down there. Remember last time when we were talking about Wolfsburg being bottom of the table? Well, in the last five games, they're now sitting seventh in form. So there's been a bit of a change, but not too much. A lot of six-goal thrillers in the weekly games. Leipzig beating Hertha 6-1, but the big one was Dortmund beating Jason's favourite Mönchengladbach 6-0. Bayern also winning 4-1, so it seems to be a regular trend. But nothing can turn us away.
Okay.
Look at that. Look, he's decided to cut me off there.
Yeah,
just as I was about to say, Dortmund might still be in it. Oh, right. There's one league left. La Liga. Now, I'm going to give you a choice. Does anyone want it? Has anyone got anything to say about La Liga? If not, then I'll spin.
Spin, randomise it.
Cool, okay.
Posse, he's quite entertaining, isn't he? But spin it first anyway. See what happens.
Let's have a look then.
To be fair, I could talk a minute about Luis Suarez's goal.
Luis Suarez's
goal?
Yep.
Could you summarise the league up in 20 seconds either side of that?
10 seconds maybe.
Do you want it?
Hell no.
Okay, cool. I'll spin. Let's have a look then. Brilliant. Me. Fuck's sake. All right. Who's counting me in?
Right. 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Right. La Liga is probably one of the more interesting leagues this year, I'd say. You know, Real Madrid are sitting top on 57 points, but it's the teams below them that it starts to get interesting. Sevilla sitting in second. Real Betis, certainly the team of the season, I'd say, in La Liga. Barcelona slowly climbing back up, especially with Aubameyang back at the side. Mm. Cook. Athletic Atletico Madrid. Something to say about Diego Simeone, I feel. Maybe that's the topic for another time. And Villarreal sitting in sixth. And if I'm going to echo Cookie's words, I'm watching them closely because of Lo Celso. In the last five games, Betis, as I said, perfect five wins, sitting top of the form table. But yeah, all eyes are certainly on Real Madrid and whether they can renew Vinicius Junior's contract coming in the summer. Otherwise, people will be snapping him up in an instant. I'm going to give an extra 20 seconds for Cossi to quickly take over here and tell us about Luis Suarez's goal. Go.
Luis Suarez's goal. I don't know if you've seen it. However, it was absolutely superb. That guy has still got it. Why Barcelona still... Like, why Barcelona got rid of him when they get rid of their best ever player? But left-footed, 40 yards out, 50 yards out, whatever it was, lob over the goalkeeper on his left foot. That is just magic. The guy is an absolute genius, and I hope he moves to Villa in the summer.
Well, that was 25 seconds, but you've still got your hands in your head, that goal. You still can't believe it.
Yeah, mate, it's incredible.
Fair. Well played. Very, very good. Right. Did you like my little Aubameyang comment, Cook? Yeah, that was good, wasn't it?
It was coming.
Right. Second segment then. Five more games to go. And I'm going to start it at the Emirates. Cookie and Jace.
Ooh.
Off you go.
Well, go on, Jace, you crack on.
Oh, not with you, I hope, anyway. But anyway, moving on. Arsenal, what a terrible, terrible January for a start. They only had two Premier League games, mind you, Burnley and City, but 1 point from a possible six. Then they got eliminated from the League Cup. Ouch. And then they showed up and embarrassed themselves against Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup. So it's not been plain sailing for Arteta, but they did finally get back on track with the 2-1 win against Brentford, which they should, because that's now seven league games without a win for Brentford. And they've lost the last five Premier League away games. So, I don't know, Cook, about you, but they're in the driver's seat now, seemingly, for top four, aren't they?
On paper, it's looking good, isn't it? I mean, just watching this game, and it's just like, you see the stats and you think, well, you expect that. I mean, 67% possession, 24 shots on goal, blah, 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 blah.
Could you spell that for me?
We know the problems. They just haven't got a striker to put the ball on the back of the net. I mean, Lacazette's got no confidence right now. You're relying on the kids, Saka and Smith Rowe. I mean, Odegaard was brilliant, I must say. He was everywhere against Brentford, trying to make things happen, getting everywhere, both offensively and defensively. I just feel like watching them, it's clicking, but it needs an end product.
I'd agree with that sentiment. I think they dominated, but, you know, really and truly, you want to be winning more. You know, they spoke about it on Match of the Day about Smith Rowe and Saka and how, you know, Smith Rowe is taken out for a few games and, you know, Arteta wanted them to be more ruthless and more clinical. Smith Rowe, obviously, showed that with his finish. It was a good take and a good goal again. Interestingly, with Smith Rowe, and I think it's gone under the radar a little bit, probably because he goes for Arsenal, because there's certainly not a lot of media noise around him as there once was when he kind of broke onto the scene last season. But he is now, so in terms of Premier League goals this season, he is now only behind Raheem Sterling for English players being the top goal scorers in the Premier League. So Raheem Sterling is currently the top scoring English football player in the league with 10, and Smith Rowe is second to that with 9. But I found it quite interesting. I don't know about your opinion on that, but...
And the scary thing is we're going to rely on him to need a few more goals from him as well from midfield, because you got two strikers in Lacazette and Nketiah who are not going to get you the goals. So if when he's on the field, as far as I'm concerned, he has to produce now. He's been forced into this situation now, as well as Saka, that they've got to come up with the goods.
Yeah,
which for me is scary, putting that kind of pressure on two kids, essentially.
Well, me and Cossie spoke about this in the transfer window pod about when we were going through and grading the, you know, each team's transfer window. And the thing that struck me is Arteta's, to be fair, he's got them in a decent position, playing good football. Defensively, they look better. Midfield is getting there. And then you look at their strike force going into the window, and it was weak anyway. But to then to go and lose Aubameyang, to then go and loan out Balogun, who I know is only a youngster, but he was keen to kind of hang around and get a new contract. It just seems a bit, I don't know, maybe it's part, as we said in the previous pod, part of a kind of bigger plan to make sure in the summer they're there to be able to get the big, big hitters that they want, because they've freed up the money. But
the only thing I'm clutching at is the fact that they're out of both cup competitions. They know they've only got 15 games left. Maybe Arteta's thinking small squads, he can work with them. He's going to get more preparation time on, say, the likes of West Ham, Man United. For me, he just needed someone in the door to replace Aubameyang. I know they're going on about, oh, we want quality. We want someone that can improve the squad and not just as a place filler. But I think having that guy on the bench come on and look hungry.
It's an interesting, I mean, the thing that would concern me if I'm an Arsenal fan is obviously you got the win against Brentford, but let's not kid ourselves. That was a Brentford team that haven't won in seven, well, now it was six league games before Saturday, seven now since then. Incidentally, is Brentford's worst winless run since 2018, where they lost eight in a row. So, you know, they really are up Schitt's Creek with that, 4 points in out of a possible 10.
Cossie called it. They're being dragged into that relegation battle. He did call it that they were. It was going to happen at some point. I think Brentford are all of a sudden realising.
Well, I'll say again,
you've got to keep up that intensity.
No, you have, and I'll say it again, Thomas Frank. He doesn't strike me as a manager that is confident at the moment in his team. I mean, again, he came out and said, "Oh, you know, we played well, we played four, but you must remember Arsenal are a top four team, top four team. So I feel like the pressure, he may not be necessarily
excuses
the board, but I feel like he's kind of cracking up a little bit, and some of his post-match interviews have been quite
bizarre. Yeah, it's the excuses he's coming out with as well. It's just a bit, I don't know. Yeah,
it's a weird one, but I do think they're going to get suckered into it. It's going to be big for them, but they don't seem to be clicking at the moment. As for Arsenal, Cook, so on paper, they're in the driver's seat in terms of games in hand and points to play for. But you look on paper at their next five fixtures: away to Watford, home to Leicester, home to Liverpool, away to Villa, away to Palace. How comfortable do you see it? And do you feel like you're in the driver's seat?
Well, momentum and consistency in the Premier League, if you take them first three games out, that's 42 points in 20 games. So, from that perspective, they have got it going in the league. I do expect us to get maybe 10 points from them games, and then next five. But then, at the same time, you've got to fit in.
That's quite,
because they haven't rescheduled the Tottenham game or the Chelsea game yet. So that could get thrown in at a moment's notice. It's very interesting, this race. I think Thursday's a massive, massive game, especially how Wolves reacted to us going there and beating them 2 weeks ago. I think there's a grudge match. That could be potentially a few nasty challenges going in there. I can't see it being 11v11.
Well, let's not talk about this fake rivalry between Wolves and Arsenal. That is just,
oh, I'm not talking about the fake rivalry, but I could see it. I could see there being a red, and you know where the red card's going to go. What was it? We had four games in a row with a red card, didn't we?
No, you did. You did.
I mean,
so quick question for you. Out of the FA Cup, out of the League Cup, clear run at the top four, games in hand, balls in your court really for top, well, I say that, you know, United are sitting there ahead of you at the minute. So, first thing, are you going to get top four, yes or no?
No.
And if Arteta, if that comes true and you don't get top four, Arteta failure or success this season? And what's the expectation for next season? If you just quickly, 20 seconds.
I think it'd be considered a failure given he had the opportunity in January to do some business, because I know he had the Vlahovic deal and that fell through. What do you do next summer? Do you still try and attract these targets they've got in mind? Can they even attract them being in Europa League? I'm not so sure, but there is room. There's more than enough room to get a few players in.
Cautious, and I sense that, Cookie. Cautious. I know you don't want to be the guy that says you'll finish fourth and then you don't, but I do definitely think it's in your court. But we know actually when it's in your court how tough that is. If we don't beat Burnley, I think it's down to you boys, to be honest. And I'll be surprised if you didn't. Let's go towards the bottom of the table then. So, Jason, Cookie, you can take your toilet break while me and Cossie discuss. Oh, Stevie G. You know, I was looking forward to talking to you about this, Cockney, because I know you are a Stevie G fan. But at home to Woys Watford, that's one win in their last 8 games in all competition. What is your take on that?
It's difficult to say, really, that they should not be losing at home to Watford, but is it the case of Villa didn't really have anything to play for this season? But it's so frustrating because everyone thinks that Villa have had this huge upturn of form since Smith's gone. And initially it looked good. And he started to get players like Buendia playing really well. He's obviously brought in Coutinho. And it was like, oh yeah, they're looking really good. But when it's 1-7, they're having, against Watford, for example, obviously Danny Ings, again, missed a fair few chances and you're wondering what the hell is he doing there. He had a golden opportunity which he hit the post to put them 1-0 up, I believe. They had 20 shots at goal, 1 shot on target. With Danny Ings up front, with Coutinho in your team, with Buendia in your team. But why have you got that many shots on goal with only 1 on target when you've got Danny Ings playing up front?
Is Danny Ings the worst signing of the season?
I'm just struggling to think who would be even worse. I think me being a Norwich fan could have given you 5 or 6 names other than the last month, and all of a sudden these players have started to look good for us. So yeah, I can't see why Danny Ings on the contract that he'll be on. I just don't get it.
I'm pulling this out of thin air a little bit, but I just want to ask you a question and then see. So would you say at the moment Palace have a chance of being sucked into relegation?
I personally think no, basically because obviously Jason's made us believe that Palace are the best team in the whole world. but however, I know what you're going to say to me. You're going to say that Villa are only one place above Crystal Palace. They have got a game in hand, granted. However, you can argue that the most likely out of the two of them, you'd say Crystal Palace. However, if you're going to say that Palace could get dragged into it, then you have to say that Aston Villa are going to get dragged into it, especially with 1-7. I personally think that Crystal Palace are going to be okay. However, maybe Palace fans are going to be a bit more cautious than I am because I'm looking below them at the Brentfords, the Watfords, Burnleys, and obviously Norwich with Everton 50-50. But I can see where you're coming from.
I agree. But the only reason I mentioned it was because you alluded to the fact that what have they got to play for? And if they're not careful, they'll have a lot to play for. I think they just got to be a little bit careful because, you know, I do feel that we're criticising, you know, Leicester's and things like that. And rightly so. We deserve to criticise Leicester. You know, over the last 10 games, they've only got 9 points. Villa have only got 11. So I think we discussed it the other week that, you know, Gerrard was being discussed as, you know, he's done very well and things like that. But, you know, the results don't lie. You look at their results that they've lost to, obviously they lost to Brentford. You know, they drew to Leeds. They've now lost to Newcastle. They've now lost to Watford. They've got a big run of fixtures, funny enough, in the next 3 games. They've got Brighton, Southampton and Leeds, which is going to be, you know, top of that pack, middle of that pack, bottom of that pack.
And if you think about it, Brighton are going to have to surely have something to prove at home. Southampton, they're a team that They could lose 2-0. They could win 4-0. You never know. And obviously Leeds again at Elland Road. And then West Ham after that. And then Arsenal. So you think, well, hang on a minute. I sit here confidently thinking now Villa won't get into the relegation battle since Gerrard's been there playing good football. But it's kind of worrying, really.
My concern is, did they hire Gerrard for that purpose to get them out of a relegation scrap? Because can he do it?
No, they didn't.
And this is the worrying thing. You've got a Roy Hodgson at Watford who knows what he's doing in them kind of scenarios. You've got Sean Dyche knows what he's doing in them scenarios. Dean Smith probably knows what he's doing in them scenarios. I don't think they ever appointed Steven Gerrard thinking he was ever going to be in a relegation scrap. And I don't think he's the type of manager they would have wanted for that. Everton are finding that out with Lampard.
Agreed.
It's the manager you want. He's not proven. Eddie Howe, you could even say he's got more credentials of a relegation scrap than any of them two.
As a manager, he's got more Premier League experience.
Well, exactly. So Villa have got to be very careful they don't end up in a scenario which they didn't sign up for. Because then if you was then to say, was Gerrard a good appointment for a relegation scrap, I'd have said no.
Well, again, think about how much money Coutinho is on to be there. He'll probably be their highest paid player.
Well, this is my point. 6 months they signed him for. If they go down, it could be a horrendous signing for just where it left them for those 6 months. Because he's not going to stay there next season. And all of a sudden, that wage bill was for what? One thing I am conscious of, just while we entered the halfway point of us talking about this, is Watford. I'll leave this to you because I say this tongue-in-cheek, you're more experienced about talking about this topic than I am, but you probably are keeping a closer eye on Watford than I am.
Well, again, under Ranieri, you'd have thought, oh, they're dead and buried, wouldn't you? And then when Roy took over, he didn't have an incredible start for his first, two or three games. And then, so let's have a look. So yeah, they lost. The Brighton loss for me was the big one. Obviously, they lost against West Ham, half to be expected. But the Brighton loss was at home. That was me thinking, do you know what? They're dead and buried. Then all of a sudden, I'm looking at their performance and their win away at Aston Villa, a team that is meant to be on the rise. As you say, they hired Gerrard to potentially be in the top seven, maybe this season at best, maybe top, yeah, obviously certainly the top table. And then all of a sudden, we're talking about Aston Villa in a relegation battle. But now they've got a manager in Roy Hodgson. I think as soon as that was announced, Jason said that's them staying up. Obviously, it didn't get off to the best of starts, but that one win, that's huge for Watford. And the next game is Palace at home, Manchester United away, a team that they beat at the start of the season. Obviously, you can't always go for that. Then Arsenal at home, obviously, that's an easy 3 points. I'm joking, Cookie. But again, that's... Then Wolves Watford on the 10th, but I don't know. I'm worried. Obviously, I think Norwich are going down full stop. However, it is nice to have a bit of a fight. But I thought Watford were one of the teams guaranteed to join us. And though I still think they will go down because I think the other teams have got enough, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than what you think.
I would put money on it now. There's going to be a surprising team in that bottom three. It could be Everton. It could be Leeds. I don't think it can be, but again, points don't lie. It could be Palace, it could be Villa. I mean, if you count Villa in it, could Leicester be in it, tied on the same amount of points? We don't know, but I have a feeling it's going to be, unfortunately, Koss, I just think it was too little too late. It's going to be a case of Norwich with Watford or Burnley, one of them, and I wouldn't be surprised if the other team is a big one.
Well, you know what I'm going to say. I'm going to say Brentford, Norwich and one other, personally.
Well, there you go. It could very well be. I just think it was a good thing to highlight because I think Lampard and Gerrard have been sort of touted as, oh, they're taking over these big clubs and happy days, all on the up. I mean, imagine one of them has that added to their resume. Lampard would be game ego. Over.
His ego could not take that either. Obviously, Mr. Chelsea boy. But yeah, to go back to Watford quickly, if they keep Dennis fit, Dennis has had direct involvement in 14 of Watford's last 24 goals. Well, all 24 goals this season. So that shows how integral he is. If he gets injured, that could really put them in the shit. However, keep him fit, and he's going to be so integral. Obviously, Roy Hodgson's keeping a strict defence in his typical tactics, but that they played. Oh yeah, what more can you say? Than I'm shit at it, thinking, oh God, I thought they were down, but here we are talking about teams about 7-8 places above them that could also get dragged in just because of that one result, which was a bit of a head turner.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And Sarr's obviously back as well now, so it'd be interesting to see what that does. But they've come through the African Cup of Nations quite well, considering, you know, they could have been dead and buried, but here they are. They're clinging on in there. But there are a big number of games coming up in the next few weeks, that's for sure. Come on then, Jace.
Let's be having you. Come on.
Let's talk about Palace, shall we? Because how long does it get until you start saying this is getting too close for comfort? Because what you're now 19th in the last five games with not a league win this year.
Yeah. Look, I joke all the time and say Vieira's great. We've played really well. We have played very well. I think what's important is, I think there was a point in the season when Gallagher was on it, Edouard was on it, all the players were on it, and everyone was like, Palace are turning heads here. They could actually break in. You know, people were talking about us breaking into the top, you know, top half of the table. I think it's very, very, very important. I'm the same, because as much as I joke about how good we were, I think it's very important to remember where we were the week before Patrick Vieira came into the football club. And that was a club that had about 13 players out of contract that, let's face it, I remember being on this podcast and it came up on Twitter saying we were set to appoint Patrick Vieira as manager. And I laughed and said, well, that's us relegated then. That's typical Crystal Palace. So I think, yes, we've had highs and we've looked really good. But I think it's really important to remember this is the first season in a big, big transition period for Crystal Palace Football Club. It's very hard to forget, given all the positives that Vieira has brought to the club in such a short space of time, what he's had to deal with. 13 players out of contract, Eze just coming back from a long-term injury, young, unproven, arguably, players at this level, and he's getting a tune out of them. So the average age of our back line, I mean, you take Joel Ward out of the equation, who's passed it, Anderson, Gui and Mitchell, that must be like the average age of about 22, 23. So it's a very, very young team. One thing that I think is understated with Palace, so African Cup of Nations came up. We lost Chekiate in midfield, who's our midfield general. And then also around about the same time, we lost James McArthur to injury. If you cast your mind back pre then, McArthur and Chekiate were the key cogs in that midfield. And people will say Conor Gallagher, but Conor Gallagher's kind of gone off the boil a little bit. But even Conor Gallagher himself, I think it was back in October or November, when he was asked about playing in Palace midfield, and he said, who was the fittest player? Because everyone was saying about Conor Gallagher being really fit. And this will surprise a lot of you, but the fittest player at Palace and the player that covers the most distance in a game on average for Crystal Palace Football Club, a 34-year-old James McArthur. So you take those two out of the equation and it's a big, big miss for Palace. So look, form isn't ideal. As you've said, since 6th of November, we've only won two games. We've drawn five and we've lost seven. But if you break the season up into thirds, first part of the season, we were drawing and winning. Second part of the season, we were just drawing. It was like Crystal Palace are like draw FC. And then this third part of the season, it's rhetoric is losses. But, you know, within those key periods, there's different contributing factors. First part of the season was Vieira new in. Second part of the season, it started to gel. Third part of the season, we lost two or three key players. And, you know, it is what it is. So, look, it's a big week for Palace. It's a massive week. Watford on Wednesday is not going to be an easy game. And Roy Hodgson will have Dennis right up Joel Ward's arse. If it's Joel Ward playing instead of Klein, that will be the weak link that Hodgson no doubt will try and exploit. That's going to be a tough game. I don't think that's going to be an easy one. Then we've got a resurgent Burnley at Selhurst on Saturday. We need 4 points minimum. This is no doubt Vieira's biggest test as Palace manager, and it's got to be 4 points as a minimum. I've been here before and said, oh, it's a big week for Palace, and we ended up, I think it was when we beat Everton, we got to that, we drew against Southampton, we lost to Spurs 3-0, and everyone was like, oh, it's a big game for Palace, and then we beat Everton 3-1. It's the same here now. He's got a fully fit squad. I think the biggest thing for Vieira is the front three. Find the right combination. We've got, you know, Benteke, I'm surprised that he's been dropped, to be fair, in favour for Mateta all of a sudden, because I think before Benteke got dropped, he'd scored 4 goals in 5 games. So, look, it's going to be tough for Palace, and we could get dragged into it, but I think we will. I don't think it's a surprise that we should be down there because of the context of the whole season. We actually were expecting us to be down there, but it will be the first test of Vieira. There was another team in this game, and I'll touch on them now, Chelsea. It's only the first time they've recorded back-to-back wins since October.
I made a note here that I think Chelsea are more likely to finish fourth than be title winners.
Oh, I agree with you. And here is the problem with Chelsea. So the stat has been talked about already, Lukaku and the amount of touches he had on the ball. Disgraceful as an attacking player. But get this. So Chelsea have kept 37 out of 70 possible clean sheets in 70 attempts. That's in all competitions. So clearly, where the weakness is in attack, where they can't get a chime out of Lukaku, defensively, they're very, very good. So the problem with Chelsea is, defensively, they're fine. Midfield, they're fine. But you just can't get the combinations right up top. Whatever, and if they are even training it, because on Match of the Day, they joked and said, well, they can't be training it. Whatever he's doing, he's getting the combinations right in defence. Midfield, he's just about got it. But whatever they do in training up front, it just doesn't connect. It does not work. And to have Lukaku come in on big money at 80 million quid or 90 million quid and not get a dime out of him, that's a concern. You're not talking about a youngster here. He's 28, 29 in his peak.
We said this before. I know on the ball he's not great, you know, 7 touches. But whose fault is that?
Tuchel's. Well, it's a bit of both. Match of the Day alluded to it quite well when they roll back the footage. You can see there are times when players get in positions and Lukaku just isn't anticipating the run. But on the flip side, there are times where he signals for the ball because he's in the position and he doesn't receive it. Now, if I'm a striker and I'm shouting for the ball and I don't get it, I'm going to be pissed off. So then I'm just not going to look interested. I'm not going to anticipate the runs. You know, players don't pass to him and it works twofold, right? If you're not passing to me as your main striker, you're showing you don't believe in me. People joke about Lukaku's first touch, right? Says, oh, his first touch is awful. But let's not remember, his career has been born out of being a target man. When he was at West Brom in his early days, when he went to Everton, when he was the target man, the 4-2-3-1, two wingers and a number 10, he was brilliant. Inter Milan, Conte, wing-backs, get the ball into Lukaku, he delivers. The two clubs where they haven't quite delivered on that front, Manchester United and Chelsea, look what happens.
I'll be honest, I feel like if Lukaku joins any other club,
put it this way,
other than Man United and Chelsea, I reckon he's scoring 15 goals minimum.
I do, I think, yeah.
I've got to be honest, I look at that starting 11 for Chelsea just before we move on, and you've got Lukaku in the centre, Havertz and Ziyech, who aren't traditional wingers. I mean, Ziyech can play there. Havertz, we know is... Well, we don't know what Havertz is at the moment. I thought he was the ideal number 10. But then you've got Pulisic, who is a winger, playing in centre midfield with Jorginho and Kante. Now, I wouldn't say Kante's been used effectively since Tuchel's been... I don't think Kante is the player that he... I think he still could be. I just don't think he's been utilised in the right way.
Even with Lampard, he wasn't, though. Even with Lampard, he kind of shuffled him over to the right-hand side of the three.
You've got Saar, who's not a fullback, playing in fullback, and Christensen playing at right-back. Like, it makes no sense. Tuchel strikes me as a manager that's trying way too hard when it really isn't that complicated. Because when you look at Chelsea's bench or their possibilities, that they could easily simplify it. Like, I just don't understand why he's making it that difficult. Mind you, saying that, I will caveat that. For a Chelsea bench, that is bang average.
Yeah.
Alonso, Arrizabalaga, Shalaba, Kennedy, Kovacic, Loftus-Cheek, Sal, who's alone, Vale and Werner. That is a weak bench. Yeah. And I don't even look at that starting 11 and think that's a starting 11 that will win you the league.
No.
So Chelsea are well off the pace. They're well off Man City and Liverpool. And I think they're nearer to falling victim to the teams below them, like Arsenal. I wouldn't even say Arsenal are that far off that Chelsea starting 11. Yeah, value for money-wise, but would I say I wouldn't have Smith Rowe in the side up than Havertz right now? No, but Havertz should never have got to this stage. Havertz was Germany's golden boy. So I don't understand it at all. It'd be interesting if they even finish third at the end of it. But let's talk about a team that are currently in second. And as we alluded to earlier, could be pushing for the for another title, which I don't think anyone saw coming 10 games ago. And we've also got another team at the bottom of the table who are hoping they might be able to get out of it. I know you're torn between the two, Kos. So I will pass this over to you and Mr. Controversial Cookster to see what you both think. So, yeah, Liverpool-Norwich.
Well, I've always been honest. Norwich are my first team. They're my local team. They're the team that I've had a season ticket for all my life. So, yeah, it is difficult when the two teams meet. However, it always is Norwich, other than obviously every other game of the season, I'll be rooting for Liverpool. But, I'll let Cookie start.
Liverpool, they've got that knack, haven't they? They're going to win games. At some point, you can keep Mane quiet, you can keep Salah quiet, you can keep, I mean, they had Firmino, didn't they? I mean, he's not been at it the last year or so. If it's not him, it's Jota. I mean, even they probably can't believe what's happening in Manchester right now, because they've just been plodding along, you know, carefully going about their own business, doing what they normally do. And they've got themselves back into what is now a title race. And they've got plenty of time. And they've got to play them.
And they've got the best forward, what, four, five, six?
They've got the best
players.
I'd say they've got five now, haven't they? Would you not class Diaz, if he can hit the ground running like Jota did? Yeah. Now, this first goal.
He's hit the ground running, as you say.
I mean, they could be on for a duo for the Champions League. I mean,
I think I've seen a lot of Man City fans on Twitter absolutely rubbing it into everyone that they've won the league this season already. And I think a lot of other fans conceded that Man City were going to run away with it because it was however many points, 10 points, 9 points, etc. And it's very, very rare for Man City to drop points like that. And also, all of a sudden, it's in Liverpool's hands.
But also, you got to revert back to that Van Dijk is back at that level.
Yep, which was the huge factor last season.
All of a sudden, he's come back into his element.
If you look at the defensive situation at Liverpool, it's never been that good. Matip's been fit the whole season. They brought, obviously, Konate in for 35 million. They've made the right additions. Klopp is keeping the best players happy. And no matter who Van Dijk plays against, obviously, lesser teams like Norwich, obviously, Gomez can replace Trent, and obviously, Tsimikas can replace Robertson. But
I mean, the players they've brought on, it's frightening, really. They brought on Thiago for Oxlade-Chamberlain, Origi for Naby Keita, and Minamino, who arguably could play in a lot of the teams in the Premier League. But Diaz,
agreed.
It's, you know, it's frightening what he's building there at the minute, Klopp. But it's coming at the right time.
Oh, 100%.
They're in for good running right now, and I mean, I don't know what Liverpool's fixtures are coming up. I mean, I suppose it doesn't matter really, does it, who they've got coming up? But
as long as they keep doing what they're doing,
they've got to be looking at that Man City game.
Well, the next game's Leeds at home on the 23rd, and then it's two cup games after that. It's the EFL Cup, obviously Chelsea,
the cup final.
The final, yep. And then it's, again, it's Liverpool-Norwich at Anfield in the FA Cup. And then it's West Ham at home, obviously Champions League, Inter at home, Brighton away, Arsenal away, Manchester United at home. That takes us up to the end of March.
But it's that April game. I can see that being a potential title decider, even with five or six games to go.
Yep, completely agree. And that's going to be huge. But I think it's good for the Premier League, like to go to this, take it a little bit back about the individual game against Norwich. It's great for the league. I think every single fan wanted to see the title race back open, and it is hugely
and
back
the fact
open
that
now.
They've earned the right because you being bottom of the league, you gave them a hell of a scare.
That's what's so frustrating, because obviously you know I went into that game obviously with my yellow glasses on, and it was reassuring to see. I said pre-podcast that Norwich is so frustrating because we do so well in certain games where we look like we're fighting, look like we're creating chances, we look good, we look like we've got a team that we could potentially stay in that league against all the odds, but it's never those performances that get you points. It's the performances in the fight does not get you points, and no one ever remembers that when we're sitting bottom of the league and we're most likely going to get relegated. We took that game to Liverpool. Like in the first 30 seconds, Pukki was running down the right. We had a shot on goal and got a corner within the first 30 seconds. And they're thinking, well, do you know what? We're not actually sitting back. I think that's what Dean Smith has installed in our squad, that we're not there to make up the numbers. We're there to fight. We are there to not be whipping boys. And we caused Liverpool a huge, huge scare. If Pukki could bloody finish in the Premier League more often. I love the guy to bits, and we wouldn't be where we are if it wasn't for him. He's an incredible player, and he's still a good Premier League striker. But
is he a needy guy though in the Premier League?
Is he a needy striker
where he does score, but he's not quite there when you need him?
Yeah, very true. But the thing is with them, with Pukki, we changed our system against Liverpool because Adam Ida is now injured, a player that I was actually gutted to see injured because he's been absolutely superb under Smith. Again, something I never thought I'd see. So we reverted back to a front three. And Prashica obviously looked absolutely superb. Pukki had that golden opportunity to put us 1-0 up. And then we had a golden opportunity after that. We could have gone into that into half time, 3-1 up. And then obviously, we went 1-0 up. Obviously, the first Kosovan to score in the Premier League, which was a huge deflection, but we'll take it. And then we just sort of capitulated. It was one of those things that you know that...
Home to Brentford is a potential six-pointer and away to Leeds in March, isn't you?
Yeah,
arguably.
100%. So you don't stay up by playing the teams like Liverpool, but as you say, we caused them a scare. And again, it was one of those almost games where if you take more positives
out of them kind of games than, you know, than
negatives, but still,
3-1.
Yeah, very true. But it's still 0 points. And it says a lot that I am gutted that we lost that because it was there for the taking. It says a lot how much we've progressed under Smith, because otherwise it would just be like, right, Fark would turn up. Yeah, the home team is an incredible team. They spanked us 6-0, but it's to be expected. Dean Smith after the game would be like, well, we had them there. We just didn't take our chances. Ultimately, it's still 0 points and we're bottom of the league because of the other results around us.
It is going to be really interesting this run now. The bottom of the table is way more exciting. I mean, to be honest, the fact that there's a title race, there's top four up for grabs, and there's the bottom of the table yet to be sorted gives us a bit of excitement going into, you know, these remaining, 13 games that are left, can you believe it? 13 games only, and then we're back to where we were. It goes so quickly. One more game then. Cookie, I know you're staying on with me for this final summary. I want to talk about arguably my team of the season at the moment, and arguably the biggest upset of the season, potentially, if they carry on playing the way they are. So we need to discuss Southampton Everton. Now,
is it an upset at the minute?
Well, I would have said at the beginning of the season, there's no way Everton should even be anywhere near this. But there were signs, and it was highlighted throughout the season by us that, you know, their squad was never as good as people made it out to be. The board are all over the place. You did call it.
I called Everton start of the season. I just felt that they were... I looked at their and what they did in the summer, and I just think you're relying too heavily on Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison. I understand that they got blindsided by Ancelotti just leaving them in the lurch. I get that. James Rodriguez was left out in the cold by Benitez. I mean, getting Benitez in, I mean, whose crazy idea was that in the first place?
I thought his credentials would be good enough. You know, I get the reasons behind how it maybe hadn't worked, but I don't think it helped that they employed him for that purpose of keeping them up, because I don't think the fans were ever going to give him a chance. You know, Cossie alluded to it earlier about, you know, Newcastle probably, regardless of who they hired, were going to be in a better vein of form simply because the man that they didn't want to be there was no longer there. I feel this is a similar situation with Everton at the moment, that regardless of who they hire, that board are what Everton want out. You know, the fact that we got the board out protest during a period of time when Benitez was there, I think says a lot, because you would have thought Benitez would have been number one on their list. And don't get me wrong, he was probably.
But what do they want, though, from that board? They've spent £500 million since he's been there.
This is my point. We've spoken about Everton and you know, the board, and I don't want to repeat anything or anything like that. I don't think, in all fairness to Everton as a club, I think it's a bit catch-22, because I don't think their fans are taking the easy cop-out of saying, oh, blah, blah, blah. I don't think they even understand what the problem is, and I don't think they even know what they want. They probably want the board to spend money. They've spent money. So I don't think they're intelligent enough to turn around and go, we want that money spent wisely. Because I think that's the big issue. And this is where I alluded to it earlier. It's easy to sit there and go, Newcastle have spent money and they're going to stay up. Of course they have. They've spent 100 million. Well, look at Everton. Spent 500 million and they're worse than they were when they spent 500 million.
I mean, we've already alluded to Newcastle's performance, that they didn't even rely on their new signings on £100 million worth of talent in January.
There's a question there as to whether Newcastle's starting 11 is that much worse than Everton's.
I mean,
other than Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison.
I mean, Van der Beek in midfield, I mean, he's not even their player.
Dele Alli's theirs. Have they played him yet?
No. Centre-backs at the minute are Keane and Holgate. I mean, what do you do with it? I mean, the best player, arguably, this season has been Damari Gray, and he's out injured.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I'm massively concerned for Everton at the moment, because I know it's easy to say their form was terrible, and it was terrible under Benitez. I'm not going to lie. It was worse than I thought it was ever going to be. But if you said to me right now, you've got a choice between Benitez or Lampard to keep you up, there was only one man I would ever pick.
Yeah.
I think it could be a case of careful what you wish for, because
they've got to be careful of their next three fixtures. I mean, where do you see them getting points? Man City at home, Tottenham away, Wolves at home.
And then Newcastle. I can't even see him getting a win against Newcastle at the moment.
Confidence would be so shot to bits that Newcastle will probably just rock up and just turn over an easy 2-0 win. I mean, I'm perplexed by Everton.
Yeah. I mean, we're perplexed by Everton. But how perplexed are you by Southampton with what they're doing at the moment?
Manager has got to be up there for manager of the season in terms of how he's managed to pick them off the ground twice in the last couple of seasons from 9-0 losses. I mean, psychologically, how do you even pick up a team or players that have just gone through that?
Incredible. I mean, we were talking about West Ham having an amazing season when it started, and Southampton, and this is how crazy it is when it's just the way it's just the other way around, that it doesn't look quite as good. But Southampton have been better than West Ham in the last 15 games.
And I'm not surprised either when you watch them play.
And I wouldn't even say, I'm going to be honest, I'm going to be really critical with this. I would say Southampton's squad is, in terms of other than Ward-Prowse, bearing in mind, you know, no one saw Brozier coming on, I would have said, to begin with, that was one of the weakest squads outside of the three Premier League teams that were promoted. I just wonder what Hasenhüttl could do with a squad if he had the chance. Might be someone to keep an eye on. But then again, he said he's going to retire. So I was going to say, it might be someone to keep an eye on for one of those other jobs that we were throwing around earlier. But maybe he's not even going to get to that point, which strikes me as unusual. But then again, who are we to judge? You know, who says a manager can't have a stint? And then when he's tired of the, you know, of the role and the routine, he packs it in. You don't have to be like Roy Hodgson and feel like you're always doing it. But I massive credit to Southampton. I enjoy watching them. I think Ward-Prowse deserves a top six move. And, you know,
this season he's got to get that.
I think it will be.
If he wants it.
I think it will be. But no, massive credit to Southampton and, well, Everton. We need to keep an eye on them because, am I right in thinking they are one of the only remaining teams that have never been relegated from
the Premier League, yeah. Or from the top division.
Good old Lamps. The top division. Take them down. Kill.
What do they even do if that happens?
Well, let's bring the other boys in and see, because let's round these games up, because Everton and Southampton was the last game.
Until they get a consistent joined up approach between director of football, board, in terms of coach, manager and playing style, they're not going anywhere. They are not going anywhere. Lampard's come in. They've got Van der Beek. He won't even be theirs at the end of the season. They've brought in Dele Alli, who, well, has been dropped to the bench as quickly as he started the game. I don't see it. You know, Allen was one of the best midfielders in Europe for Napoli. He's got no resale value because he's like 30 or 31 now. They're a mess. They're an absolute mess.
We'll keep an eye on them over the next few weeks. I know they've had a couple of games that were postponed, so we'll see how they get on. I know Burnley and Leicester are in there, so let's see what happens. Conscious of time, we've got to move on just to get predictions quickly out the way for the new round of predictions. We have got two games that have been brought back. Watford Palace is in there and Liverpool Leeds is in there. So we need two more games, let's say, just to keep this short. So I'm going to throw it out there and say, Jace, I'll let you pick one of them from the weekend. And let's give it to Cossi then, shall we, and see if he can do it. So, Jace, give me a game that you would like to go into predictions.
I'm going to go for Leeds Tottenham.
And your score?
I say 3-1 Tottenham. It's not going to be a false storm. This is going to be the real thing.
Well, Burnley might be the full storm before that, but hey ho. Hoss?
Bloody hell, that's going to be. I think that's going to be 2-2, please. It's going to be a cracker.
I swear, if he gets this correct, there's definitely there's a conspiracy going on.
I'm going to go on based on your previous fact that Conte is only going to have, 3 days to prepare for this one? I'm going to go 1-1.
I think Burnley's more likely to be the upset than Leeds for some weird reason. I said they'd get 4 points. I wouldn't be surprised if Burnley was a draw, so I'm going to stick with my guns and think this one's going to be a win. I'm going to also say 3-1 Spurs, Jace, so I'll go with you on that one. Cossi, your game?
I'll have Brentford versus Newcastle, please. Ooh. And I'm going to go an away win 2-1.
I'm going to have to go away win as well, and I'm going to say 2-1 as well.
Make it a triple, but I'm going to not have Brentford to score. I'm going to go 2-0 Newcastle.
Funny enough, that was my score. I will echo that as well and say 2-0 Newcastle. None of us believe Brentford are getting anything out of that. I think they've only scored one in their last five, so not surprised we haven't got them down for scoring any goals. And like that, boys, we'll keep it shorter. That is in, I won't do who's up or down this week because we had a middle segment. We'll have to save that. Cookie, I think you've got to move like 10 places or whatever it is. But we'll cut that there. So episode 38 is done. Wheel of Wonder is back, hence why it was a bit of a longer show. I believe it's a double game week for some teams. I know we've got midweek, which, you know, no games are on TV other than Wolves-Arsenal, but that's another debate. Especially with a Watford Palace game, you would have thought someone would have snapped that one up because I think that's a huge game. But not to be, not to be. We'll have to find a stream somewhere. Not really, we don't stream games here. Anyway, boys, it's been lovely talking to you. And I will see some of you back for episode 39, where I'm sure everything will be flipped on its head. So for now, it's see you later from me.
Thank you very much. Good night.